You're listening to Red Nation Online.
It's all number nine. Gilberto fires and scores! My goodness, he backed it up with that! Okay, all is forgiven, says Jermaine Defoe. What a bullet, his first goal in MLS.
That's absolutely wild. But you got to give it to Jermaine Defoe.
Monday, June 30th, it's ENB Sports, Aaron Nielsen, and I'm Ian Clark, and we're in the midst of our Canada Day weekend to discuss TFC and their most recent 2-2 result with the New York Red Bulls. A few days late, it's a superficial review looking mostly at the state of the team and the standings, the Gibraltar incident, and how Bradley Wright Phillips, a career 2nd and 3rd division player, punished the Reds and has emerged as a quality MLSer. We also look at the month ahead and what might be in store personnel-wise for TFC. All that and more in the next 40 minutes on Eastside Stand Up. We could have kind of held off on this podcast and Dream Podcast for another week or two. But I think everyone's suffering from a bit of a World Cup hangover.
You missed the moment of the season.
I know. And as it's also the Canada Day weekend, I'm nursing a bit of a real hangover as well. So trying to get to this, and here we are. I don't even know what park this is. We're at a park out somewhere in your neck of the woods.
Lithuania Park.
Yeah, and this is what you get. This is we rolled up on this place because we usually would be down by my neck of the woods.
You came up to mine, the ghetto.
The ghetto. And we come in here, and it's like the first thing that happens, we sit down, is an ice cream truck pulls up and starts playing ice cream music, and then school's out, so about 200 kids just roll up into this area that we were sitting, and it's just like, holy crap, can we just get this going? And now fire trucks roll by. But anyways, I digress. Can we just get this going? Yes, we're back. MLS is back, sort of, from the break. You know, teams were still playing U.S. Open Cup matches.
Yeah.
Some got a break, some didn't. Games started earlier this week. Toronto FC plays on Friday. And I think the idea, Aaron, was just that, I think, what does Toronto have, like, somewhere, like, 7 games in the month of July or more? And just getting this podcast back up and running, maybe not necessarily running over that New York game minute by minute like we normally would, but there's a lot of broad strokes, I think, that we can brush, looking ahead to Chicago, looking ahead to DC, and just kind of talking about this team, where they sit at this point of the year. Because, you know, you can look back to maybe 2010 when Preki was at the helm and Toronto was in a good position. They came back from that break and kind of all went downhill.
I think I'm wearing my South Africa shirt for a reason. Total
coincidence. I didn't even think about that. But you know what? The first thing I'll say, just off the top, as we can kind of just generalize the game, is that I feel like this year is a distinctly different Toronto FC than almost any team from the last 7 years.
Sure. Yeah, personally, I sort of, it's a complete disconnect, right? And even in, it's interesting we're talking about this game, because in the preseason, based on the players, based on what was on paper, you know, I saw them as a clear favorite in the East. I saw them as one of the dominating teams. And for the most part, you know, I can understand there's a transition and trying to develop into something. Although one of the interesting things, as I did in my preview on Red Nation Online, is I said what you see now is probably not the team you're going to see at the end of the year. That what happens when a team's going for it, especially in the MLS, is that they'll go out and they'll bring in recruitments, either experienced MLS players or players from Europe and stuff like that. And I think that's a great segue, because I think the first thing that stood out for me in the New York game was Dominic Oduro and his play. And basically, Toronto explained the wings. And in my opinion, the first time I've seen Toronto all season knowing what they want to do on offense. I think prior, they knew they had the players, but they were kind of confused once they had the ball. And this game, it seemed, you know, they knew exactly what they wanted to do. And I think that's going to benefit them for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think that's definitely what I took away from the start of the game and through most of it, was that this is just, over the last 7 years, you know, you've had a sense of how to take results and really how to, you know, critically look at the performances. And I think Toronto's at a point right now where, you know, you can And it's not just an exaggeration, just a cliche. You know, is it glass half full, glass half empty?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm probably leaning a little more glass half full right now. And some of the changes that they made, I can't disagree with. And the performance that they started off this game with, and putting into context too, you know, going away to New York in my preview, I said, I mean, this is a game that has 5-0 written all over it.
Yeah.
And it has.
Yeah.
You know, we've gotten absolutely throttled
in
New York.
It's interesting because this is the third ESSU podcast I've done when games have been going on, because we did some in the off season, and they're all been Red Bull games. So I'm your Red Bull expert. But and the two previous games was one at home where Henri basically changed the game at the end of the game and they won. Cahill got a header or two headers, I think, and they won in the last second at BMO. And
Ashton Morgan getting posterized.
Yeah. And then the other game was in New York, and it was horrible.
Yeah.
Right? I think New York won 2-0, but the game, they dominated the game, and it wasn't even close. And we, you know, I think that at that time it was, you know, what can we do next year? You know, I think that was when the rumors of Lewicki were coming in, and so we didn't even care about that season anymore. I think New York's a great team to compare yourself to. You know, it, you know, if you're playing Chivas or you're playing Montreal, it's probably not, you know, to say this is where we are now, but if you're playing LA, New York, Kansas City, it is a good sort of stat. And then the barometer. And then the comparison I would say is the only other game that I thought Toronto might have played better was the game against Seattle, in Seattle. And that's another example of where you're playing against a tough competition. It's a true reflection of what you are.
Right. And I think we should, you know, there are a couple key points there that you already you know, made note of. I mean, the one thing I wanted to draw a quick connection was when we were talking about that last year game, this year game, was of course to see how far this team has come. Is there was a key player in that first game, and that was Mark Bloom.
Okay.
And that was his first game with Toronto FC, and you could see that he got skinned a few times.
Yeah.
But if you kept that performance in perspective, of course, you know, he's stepping up from, I think it was Atlanta Silverbacks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, of course, you know, getting familiar with his team and how far he's come in this year. I think this match is a good indicator to say, like a team in about a year can go from that performance, even though the scoreline wasn't diabolical.
Yeah,
it wasn't a good game. A year later, even with a lot of the same players, put in a completely different performance.
Yeah, and even though we allowed two goals on Saturday or Friday, I don't think the defense could be blamed. And this is one of those things where Toronto has an excuse, and it's actually legitimate. Because I think what was lacking in today's game, since we said the positive, one of the things that lacking in the last game was because Bradley was missing, they had no transition in defense. And you would assume with, you know, and I think the question marks in the previous game was Osorio and you know, and in some cases Warner. And, you know, you would assume with Bradley there, when the team is when the opponent's going on the counterattack, you'll have the defensive midfielder that would slow that down. And what we had in the last game was mainly a track race, right, where Toronto was doing good things, but, you know, if their cross didn't go in properly or if New York got a break, it was basically returned the other way. And it was New York's 4, New York's 5 against the back 4 there because the midfield was missing from Toronto.
We've kind of been getting in the game, but I did want to preface this match just in terms of like where Toronto is currently sitting.
Okay.
And that's, I think, is an important thing to note now as we head into this week of games and as we look at this result, which is, you know, on 11 games, plenty of games in hand. Somehow it's just like I look at the last results and I'm still not in a place where I'm supremely confident that this team is where they need to be. Yet we are now 6 games undefeated.
Yeah.
And it's not one of those cheesy ones that, you know, you'd see on tfc.ca website where, you know, we've went 3 games undefeated, like you said, against the Chivas and a Montreal and in the Voyagers Cup, and that's what they would call an undefeated run. It's actually been 3 good decent wins against decent teams and then 3 draws as well. I mean, they're collecting points, and that's pretty
well.
Pretty
the way critical. I would look at it is, I think standing right now, points per game, Toronto is 2nd in the league behind Seattle. So arguably they're a 3rd way through the season, and if they were to repeat the same performance, now again, I think they're bound to improve, right? I expect this to be a sort of upward slide opposed to this is what they are. So even if they were to repeat what they did for the first 1/3 of the season, they're first place in the East, right? And again, looking at the team, what's happened, points they've lost, points they've gained, I don't think that would be against, you know, I think people would see that to happen. So, yeah. So I think we're talking about a playoff team here, and we might be talking about the team that's going to be first in the East by October.
Yeah, and I definitely at the start of the year, I was extremely, again, I think it's the past 7 years.
Yeah.
I've been traumatized. I refuse to believe.
I can respect that.
You know, you take it from one angle, and I'm definitely coming from another where it's just like, I just found it really hard to swallow that they could turn it around. And of course, we're putting the cart a little bit ahead of the cart. We're only about a third of the way through the season.
Sure.
But I'm starting to see it. Like, I'm starting to see that the trajectory is there.
Well,
my
only other point, and as we'll go more into the game, is what happened in that game, including the final result, will happen to any MLS team, right? It's not a Toronto issue. It's a league issue. It's a, you know, a goofiness issue. So reality is how many MLS teams, or how many World Cup teams allow, give up a lead in the last 5 minutes of the game, last 10 minutes of the game. It seems to be, you know, an epidemic in soccer, and certainly in the MLS, and certainly in a case in this game where, you know, the last goal was primarily because of Cahill's able to get free for a header, knowing his history with headers, knowing, I think, in the last two podcasts that we talked regarding New York, all we talked about was Cahill's headers, because I think he scored with his headers in both those games, and they allowed that to happen. So, you know, on one end, it's,
yeah,
you know, inevitable is inevitable kind of thing, right?
Well, let's just then touch on a few key points from this match that I think we both thought, and obviously the first one was the bright start.
Yeah.
You know, you had like a roughly 10 to 12, 15-minute run. I was looking more at a 20-minute thing. I think one positive I would say from this team of other ones in the past, you know, one season that stands out is that start of the 2012 season where every game I just lamented how I didn't understand what Aaron Vinter was telling these guys to get out on the field because it took him about 30 minutes to get going.
Yeah.
That's not the issue this year. And what we saw in this game was, I mean, they came out really bright and they looked fairly dynamic. And it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just a, you know, a one-dimensional approach. I kind of felt like you were seeing, you know, you just saw players running off the ball. You saw a little bit of work in triangles. You saw them going deep to send in, like, it was more than just what we'd seen from this team last year, which is just, let's just push it all the way to the touchline and try to throw it into Earnshaw.
Yeah. Well, again, I think, you know, Aduro is very MLS, right? So he's not the perfect player, and there's as many issues as there is positive. But, you know, I was, as you probably guessed, I was very happy with the trade. Number one, getting rid of Ray, personally, but also getting Aduro. But, you know, the one thing I do and I like a lot about Aduro is he knows what to expect in this league. And so when the ball's at his feet, he knows, you know, what he's going to try to do, right? And as I said, because the MLS is prone to these mistakes and is never really developed, you can get away with those. You know, usually, tactically, if you know one guy's going to do a certain thing against you, you defend against it, and then that guy is kind of on his own island. But, you know, Aduro coming in off the wing, having the ability to shoot, I don't think he's the best crosser, but because the defense has to protect his shot, it gives an opportunity to set up plays with the offensive box. And, yeah, and, you know, I think that option is a great option. And that option Columbus had last year, and other teams haven't, and it was an option that Toronto never had in the past.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, just sticking to some broad points, you know, if we're going to talk about Aduro, and you're going to say, he may not be a great crosser, but he did cross in opening goal for Toronto.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I watched that play unfold, and, you know, it's not to be unfair, but I envision what had Ray been on that side, how that play would have unfolded.
Yeah.
And for a lot of this year, his crosses were extremely unsuccessful. And then you have Aduro, who's probably more about a physical, direct approach. And he kind of just bullies his way down there and just hammers it across. And Defoe gets a foot on it, which I think that approach probably benefits him as well.
Yeah. Well, and just to give a release, you know, and playing a bit of World Cup bingo here. But if you know, in the game between, you know, part of it relates to MLS because it was a USA game. And the USA-Portugal game when Ronaldo had the ball. Now, most people know Ronaldo's a hog. He can pass, but that's not his main thing. But because the U.S. was so afraid of him to shoot, he was able to get the cross across in the, you know, 90th minute and win or tie the game for Portugal. And that's the thing, right? If you're so strong at one particular thing, that's the scouting report on you is going to be that. And so if you can change it up in any fashion, it's going to benefit you and it's going to benefit your team.
Right. And I think we should, of course, maybe preface that goal by saying I mean, that came in the second half, and we talked about this before, that Toronto was down 1-0 at the half, but I didn't feel it, and I didn't get the sense, I just didn't get the sense from that game that, 1-0 down, from what I'd seen, I wasn't concerned. I wasn't down. Like, usually I would be. Like, when Toronto City's down 1-0, I'm usually thinking, well, they're lucky. They should be down 3-0. But not in this game.
And I'll be honest with you, in terms of this game particularly, if the team went on and lost the game, as long as they played how they play in the first half, I would have been sort of happy because of the schedule they have upcoming for them, because, you're going to win, lose. No one's going to go undefeated throughout the season. So, again, it was more to me how they were playing and what potential you saw there and stuff like that.
Right. And this could be the massive chunk of this podcast. We'll see where this goes. The moment. This is the part that I think everyone is, I've seen a little bit of discussion, done a little bit of, looking around the internet to see what people thought about this, to kind of, gauge thoughts. And of course, there's the fantastic goal, but of course everything that preceded it and then after
led
it.
Up to it, yeah.
And our overall thoughts of, we can start by just saying, Gibraltar finally scores a goal.
Yeah. Well, I have, not to interrupt, but I have 2 points, and they're yin and yang, right? The first thing is if Gibraltar took that shot and it was 20 feet over the net, he might be gone, right? Because, I think he's I don't think he's worth $3 million. I think I was listening to the game on the New York feed, and New York was saying that the TFC paid $3 million bucks for Gilberto now or something like that. I don't know where they get their information from. But, he's certainly not worth that. And he was a bad financial decision for TFC. But he's a decent player and a good player in terms of MLS. And even before, when he came onto the pitch, the two things right before the free kick opportunity, one of the TFC defenders tried to give him a long ball run. And one of the things you have to take into account is, and we talked about this in preseason, is Gilberto was playing with a no-name team in Brazil. He was the main option. That team was playing a 4-5-1 and basically had him chase. And the two things Gilberto can do is he can chase the ball and score, or at least he showed that in Brazil. And he has a wicked hard shot via that video clip that everyone shows where he takes a 30-yard shot. And I think he did score from 2 direct free kicks in Brazil, and now he scored from a direct free kick in the MLS. So on the other end, on the one end, if he missed that shot because of the way he said, I want the shot, I think that, I don't know how you could deal with that. On the other end, I like the idea that he went and tried to take the shot over Defoe, because Defoe has no history of scoring from free kicks. And this notion that because he's the DP, he has to take all the free kicks, or he has to do all, I think that's complete BS, right? If you're the best free kick taker, Becker was on the pitch, or if you're the best free kick taker, that's who should be taking the free kick. So on one end, I'm glad he got what he wanted, and I'm glad he succeeded at it. On the other end, it was very risky and could have been the end of Gilberto.
Well, yeah, and that's it. There's a definite, there's just two sides of the coin about this whole thing, because it brings up the question of, was Gilberto right to be a ball hog there, and did Defoe carry himself correctly as a supposed, the highest paid player and whatever, and this whole thing that went on, and kind of having to eat a little bit of crow afterwards, and the whole awkwardness that coulda, shoulda, woulda. If this had gone wrong. Well, it didn't go wrong.
Yeah.
And Gilberto scores this incredible goal. He goes over to the sideline. Everyone is all over him, like grabbing his face and kissing his head and the whole players, and then even Defoe comes over and kind of like puts his arm around him, puts in a bit of a headlock, and is like, come on, like,
I kind of dated myself, because at the time of the goal, I tweeted about how it looked like a Chips episode, because I don't know if anybody remembered the show Chips, but at the end of the show, for no reason at all, everyone had these big smiles. And that's all the camera panned to different TFC players at the time, and everyone had these big smiles for the thing that, that took place. Yeah, no, I think it was, as I said, I tweeted at the time, moment of the season, and even when we're in a playoff run in September, I'm imagining that we're going to reflect on this moment and say how it was cool. And that's one of the reasons you follow sports.
And I think to draw an interesting, maybe a comparison, it's sort of loosely similar, was, I don't know if you remember when Pablo Vitti came on board.
Okay.
And everyone talked about his quality and where his pedigree of where he came from. He was the guy that was ahead of Messi and Aguero. And we're waiting for him to score, and waiting for him to score. And then he scored that goal, and he took off his shirt, and he gets called back. And he just, everything went wrong. And he finally scored a goal, and it wasn't a great goal.
Yeah.
It was nothing to get excited about. And then he goes off and whatever and does okay in, like, South America and Central America or whatever. But then we have Gibraltar score this goal that was just... I mean, the whole boonk, the whole stadium hears that, like, thing shake. And now, of course, you know, as we move on, my question, I think, would be, and discussion that we sort of had in one of the previous podcasts is, you know, obviously Gibraltar came in as a sub.
Mm-hmm.
The game before the break, it looked like Nelson was trying to get Defoe, Moore, and Gibraltar on at the same time.
Sure.
But he came up, sounded like he came up lame in the warm-up. And what this might mean moving forward. And of course, of what the relationship is between Defoe and Gilberto. I mean, these are things that I think we need to think about
I think prior to this podcast, you mentioned that in the goal that...
against Gilberto Columbus.
That they didn't really celebrate even though they scored on the goal together kind of thing.
I think that's... I just want to... That was an interesting thing. I didn't say it on the podcast. Was if you watch back to the Columbus game where Gilberto fights to get that ball onto Defoe when he does that amazing like one-touch strike on his left foot... You'll see everyone run to the corner to Defoe, but if you watch it back, Gilberto peels away the other direction and walks away from the celebration. And just kind of, I think really what it boils down to is, I think he's extremely frustrated with how the start of his career at Toronto
City. Yeah, I think he might have been sold a different story, right? I think, I don't know necessarily if he was sold a different story by TFC or by his agent or by just the idea, but I would think, my guess is, in his impression, I thought he saw himself as the main striker, the guy who's going to be the guy kind of thing. And then he looked at the weakness of the league and thought, okay, well, you know, if I score, you know, da-da-da-da-da, you know. And he probably, in some relationship, he probably looked at Camilo's success in Vancouver and said, well, that's basically the type of player I am. And if I have the same success, you know, I'm going to be rewarded for my effort and stuff like that. So I think he is the sort of, but, you know, again, it's nothing new, right? Yeah. We talked about this preseason, about him being the odd man out and how they would probably have difficulties working together and, you know, all those stories and stuff like that.
And this isn't the first time that Toronto's brought in a player, Dwayne DiRosario, who made him out to be the man, and then brought in another guy, Julian de Guzman, who was sort of upset, you know, turned up the apple cart or whatever, so to speak, whereas Gilberto very well may have been sold because he was here before Defoe.
Yeah.
And maybe he was sold. That's like, you're going to be the man. And now he's clearly not the man. He's coming off the bench.
Yeah.
And when you have a striker, you have an ego.
Yeah.
You know, you want to be in those chances. And as we circle back, you know, he went for it. He took it. So anyways, I'm at least interested to see how this plays out going
forward. Yeah, and again, I think due to the amount of games, they might, have a bit of squad rotation. But, you know, looking at what they are and looking at what they're trying to do, I think the starting 11 is basically, you know, we already know who that's going to be. And unfortunately, Gilberto seems the odd man out. And I don't know coming in as the... You know, he's a good option if you're down the goal to have a guy of that quality come in for the last 5-10 minutes. But again, the position he plays is not necessarily going to be advantageous to him or be advantageous to the team.
And I think I found a good segue to get into this because, of course, we know how this game ends up. And, you know, we can quickly look at, and what I'm getting at is I want to look at how that play sort of happened.
Okay.
And then, of course, the player who scored that goal. And draw a comparison between someone like Bradley Wright Phillips and Gilberto.
Okay.
And bringing that kind of player in from who's a League One championship level player who scored over 10 goals and someone you paid $3 million transfer for plus a DP status who's now scored one.
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting discussion. But I mean, if we look at, you know, you were talking about the way the play broke down and you said you had the crystal ball in front of you. Tim Cahill's on the field. How do you let Tim Cahill get a header?
Yeah.
And I watched that play over and over and over to see where this broke down. And it's just, I think it just comes down to, you know, there's just that moment of lack of focus where someone, I think, needed to sort of step up and point fingers and ensure everyone goes somewhere. Because as you see that replay is that Cahill peeled off of Morrow and cut in front of Henri and Henry. And Henry... You know, who else was going to do it? There's no one else there. He steps up to challenge Cahill, and that leaves everyone kind of not really sure where to go and what to do. Yeah. And then you have Bradley Wright Phillips, the guy that we've talked about already, saying how he had a chance previously, He should have tied that game in Toronto.
Yeah.
And then he comes through and then scores that the tying goal to salvage a point. And I think that's I think what I want to talk about though is this type of player that Bradley Wright Phillips is.
Yeah. Now again, I think he's as equally as frustrating as he is rewarding, right? And I think if you were a New York fan in that Toronto game, you'd be very upset, the one where he missed a complete chance. And I caught myself during this game because it's right before, I don't know, I think 10 minutes before the end or 15 minutes before the end, Wright Phillips missed a chance that should have been a goal. So I was going to be critical of him on Twitter opposed to being positive about him. And I didn't do it, and lucky, you know. And he ended up scoring the goal. Certainly. I think they're not to, I don't want to go on a tangent, and maybe this is a segue. Maybe this is something I should, you know, Kamal and I should talk to on his Gaffer Hooligan podcast. But, you know, the whole league is messed in terms of what they're trying, their goals are, what they're trying to achieve. We know that if you bring any player of championship quality from England, they're going to be an adequate player in the MLS, right?
I would say more than adequate. Yeah. And a lot of it.
And we also know that most players in the championship, beyond the ones who are destined for the Premier League, are in a salary cap range or in a pay range similar to MLS. But at the same time, the championship, because they don't have minor league sports in the UK, the championship is regarded as second tier, right? And second tier in everything, right? And the one benefit that the MLS has is comparative to a lot of soccer leagues in the world. The hotel accommodations, the flights, the gear you get, the relationship with the fans, the relationship with the media is a lot better than what you get being a first division player or you know, championship or League One player in England. So, you know, again, it irks me because, you know, I thought the goal of the MLS was to develop American and Canadian talent, and arguably, you know, it's funny because he's British. Right, but he went to the American college system. But you know, you compare Dom Dwyer to Wright Phillips, right? And arguably, you know, Dom Dwyer is a bit younger. Dom Dwyer, because of he went through the college system, is a little bit behind in terms of his development. But I imagine Dom Dwyer could play in the championship and score as many goals as Wright Phillips. So for me personally, I'd rather see them develop players internally to get to that point where they're competitive. But at the same time, yeah, you know, again, I don't, you know, not to harp upon and not to be too critical of Gilberto, but again, I don't see where that sold. Like, I never understood any reasoning for that move.
Right.
You know, this didn't make any sense.
Yeah, and I mean, that's obviously the point that I wanted to make when I was looking at this game and this matchup. Yeah. I mean, where you had a guy like Wright Phillips who, you know, I called him a career championship player, but the reality is he only excelled at League One. And scored plenty of goals, and I think that should really put things into perspective.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, when they look at MLS or they look at their teams, they have these stars in their eyes that they're, you know, we need to sign a guy who's from the Eredivisie, and we need to sign a guy who played in the EPL, and that's the be-all and end-all to signing good players who perform well in this league. But then these guys show up, and you know, like Bradley Wright Phillips. Or a guy like Luke Rogers, right, who just never was a top-level guy, but just has that skill set that fits in with MLS. And it's like, and then I started thinking, because I've heard people throw this name about, and if he would fit, and like people kind of say, nah, and Simeon Jackson.
Yeah.
And Simeon Jackson, a guy who excelled at League One, and in a way had an incredible end of a season at the championship level, and just didn't make it at the very top level. And now I start to think to myself, because I wasn't sure, I would have said, you know what, I'll let Simeon Jackson just stay over there and do his best in the championship.
Yeah.
But now I kind of think, you know what, if he came back to MLS, I think there's a chance that he could actually be in the right system, on the right team, he could be a really good player. And to me, that's an encouraging thing from a Canadian perspective, that, you know, you have a good Canadian player doing well in the league.
Well, yeah, and not to go off too much of a tangent, but I was actually talking to the head office of MLS, and we were talking about players and stuff, because that's kind of what I do. And one of the suggestions I gave to them was a guy named Nicky Watts, who is a Bermudan. And he was playing in the League Two in England, and he was the leading scorer in that league. He went up to League One, you know, scored a huge amount of goals. Now, this is after I talked to the MLS. He scored a huge amount of goals there. And then he just was recently bought, I believe, by a championship team for like 5 million euros or something like that. And, you know, and I feel comfortable recruiting guys from the Caribbean because of the CONCACAF success at the World Cup, and we sort of have a relationship with that association and stuff like that. That's soccer, right? If someone if someone's working with a forward momentum, there's a chance that, you know, that that's going to continue. If someone's in a 5-year dull or whatever, arguably that guy's career is coming to close to an end, or he's having issues and stuff like that. And so I always do find it a bit humorous, you know, especially, you know, Toronto has stayed away from this, but if you see Portland, they go out and grab the guy, you know, the guy who scored the World Cup goal in 1994.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, he didn't do something in 20 years, you know.
Well, hey, we did sign Mista.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
He was about 8 years removed from scoring on any kind of regular basis. I think Toronto has definitely had their share of doing that. And you know what? The one last comparison I wanted to draw was actually, I remember maybe 4 or 5 years ago, some forum where they were kind of saying, you know, who's the next guy we should sign? Who should we look at? And some guy was saying, you know, we should look at Ricky Lambert.
He's in League One.
Yeah. He's this big, strong, like, you know, target guy. He'd be the perfect fit. And I looked him up. And I was like, oh yeah, like, I can see that. Well, now we know where this story is gonna where this story ends. It's just interesting to think of where things, you know, if you have that proactive look, and if you have, like you're saying, that viewing things from that angle, sometimes.
Well, in comparison, this is, you know, for a client in the UK right now, as the World Cup is going on. There's a lot of all the club teams are making their moves and preparing for the new season, which is starting in August. And right now, and you know, soccer is a turnover sport. So, for example, in the English leagues, from the Premier League all the way to the League Two, there's about 400, 500 players on free transfers right now, and most of them are in the medium salary range for the MLS. You know, the $100,000-$150,000. So, you know, if scouting was better in the league, or if that was the ambition of the league, oh yeah, they could certainly improve the quality of the league by recruiting players from that league.
Yeah, and I think I wanted to just kind of, like, as we're hitting that 30-minute mark, I think there's only like a couple more.
Sure.
A couple points that I didn't know if you knew what Cesar's status was in terms of what his deal is with QPR. And of course, I think I've actually never seen it. And if anyone knows this, feel free to share.
Yeah.
Like, definitively, you know, what his story is post-World Cup. You know, I think most people think he's not coming back to Toronto.
Yeah, I would, you know, I would actually be interesting, you know, and again, with the MLS, there's always these MLS rules and the world rules. But it'd be interesting to look back at other players TFC got in on loan, like Becky and Bostock. And figure out what their contract was. Because I'm assuming if Caesar's playing for Toronto for the complete season, that his salary would count against the cap.
Yeah.
And I think there's some sort of favor or break. Because he's on $1 million a month
Was Nesta really making, like, there's a comparison perhaps. I mean, I think Nesta probably got a beautiful condo somewhere and maybe a nice car.
Yeah. And to add to that, you know, the fact that Toronto bought in more, and all the players they brought in, Warner, they've all been higher salary guys than the guys they gave away. So it seems to me that they've, we have cap room now, and, you know, 2 and 2 equals, you know. So, yeah, my guess is he's not coming back personally, but You'll see a video of him wishing us good chance in the playoffs right before the
yeah. And then, of course, you know, we mentioned this already. This July is the month that Toronto finally, you know, recaptures the games that they didn't have at the start of the year. It's a very busy schedule. It's probably not as tough as the start of the year, and I think Ryan Nelson lamented about that, what it looked like. But, you know, you look at across these teams, none of these teams are really like top sides right now. And I think if they get the mix right, maybe if the U.S. doesn't win this week, we'd be in a good spot going into the end of the month and that final stretch of the season, where Toronto might be in a pole position. Because we have Chicago this week. We have DC United on the weekend.
Yeah.
Houston twice and Vancouver.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's anything that we need to be too worried about. Any games where you look at and be like, that is a surefire loss. Maybe Houston away.
Yeah, Houston's not been as what's expected from this year.
No, not at all.
They've lost a few games and stuff like that. Yeah, no, I expect them to, as I said, I think they're slightly better on paper than other teams in the league. So I think when push comes to shove, they'll win games when they might have drawn games if they had a weaker lineup. So, you know, again, I my guess is, you know, and I don't know exactly what their record is now and what they're, but, you know, I'm guessing they're going to be 65-point team or so. And again, I think that's a guaranteed playoff spot, and I think that could potentially win the East. So I think the next seven games, unless they go out and lose all seven, you know, I think it's just part of the momentum of the MLS season.
And you know what? I just looked it up, and Houston's going through a horrible run of form.
Yeah.
the only win they've had in their last five games is the U.S. Open Cup against the Laredo Heat.
There you go. Yeah.
So the opportunity is definitely there. And, of course, Montreal just beat them 3-0 at home this week. So I think that's looking good for Toronto. And, you know, that's probably a good point to sort of wind this out. We'll keep this quick because it's a crazy week with these games going on, and I don't want to get too far ahead and kids screaming behind us. It's completely insane. On that note, Aaron, at ENB Sports, you did tons of World Cup work.
I did.
That I saw. That stuff was flying around, and you're covering that pretty well. You know, you're always on Kamal's podcast. You can pretty much catch you at least once a month, maybe twice on the Gaffer and Hooligan.
There's too much of me on here, so yeah.
And then, of course, this week, by the time this is out, probably you'll have a recap of the lower leagues.
I've been doing that on a monthly, and I think that, you know, again, because the league is not concentrating on player development, I decide to take it on my own.
Yeah.
So for people who are interested in that, there is players playing in USL Pro and NASL, and some of them qualified to play in the MLS. And then as we get to August, college season starts and the next MLS draft and stuff like that. So there's a lot of interesting players in the pipeline. And, you know, just as a plug, if anybody's in the Toronto region, I would suggest to go out and see an Ontario League One game because it's very exciting soccer, very open soccer. But a lot of these, and the thing that will blow your mind is if you go to an MLS game and then you see this, the gap is not as crazy as some people think. And so I think it certainly gives me a positiveness between for the Canadian national team and for soccer in general, that they can play at this quality just at, you know, a start at level.
Yeah, sounds good. Aaron, so thanks for, have you ever been to a movie theater and you're in an empty theater and then someone comes and sits directly right next to you?
I was that person.
I feel like that's going on right now. So I think this is the point that we need to maybe get up from our seats and head out. So we'll leave it at that. I think most realistic we'll be back on the weekend after DC United, which is hopefully a good result. And maybe Michael Bradley will be back by then. So on that note, thanks for listening. We'll catch you guys next time.
Cheers.
Eastside Stand-Up is the only Toronto City specific podcast breaking down the game right after it happens. We want you to get involved. Reach out to us on Twitter at Red Nation Online or on email at info@rednationonline.ca and share your thoughts on how the Reds did on the pitch today. As well, check out other podcasts on rednationonline.ca, From the Black Hole and their Gaffer and Hooligan, giving you all the coverage you'd want on Canadian soccer. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Just take a look around you. What do you see? Kids with feelings like you and me. Understand him, he'll understand you.